What would the world look like if decisions were made by the people for the people? DAO or Never is here to break down how DAOs are disrupting traditional power structures and transforming the way we interact. If you're ready, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to DAO or Never. This is a show to help you learn about the rapidly evolving world of DAOs from leaders and innovators in the Web3 world. I'm Isaac Patka, co-creator of the Logos DAO. Today we're joined by Songyi and Anna, founders, contributors, and advisors to multiple impact DAOs. Songyi is a DAO builder, investor, and experienced designer in Web3. She's passionate about building a globally collaborative economy with purpose-driven entrepreneurs and emerging technologies. Anna is a co-founder of HelpUANow.org, a community effort to attract funding to high-impact volunteer initiatives in hard-to-reach areas of Ukraine, and previously managed community operations for Peace DAO, who focuses on volunteer efforts in combat zones. We're really excited to have you both here. And I think that something that would be very helpful to define up front is just what impact DAOs are, maybe what they are and what they aren't. So Songyi, did you want to take that first?
Yeah, it's a big question. And when I heard about impact DAOs, you know, I was a little bit confused. I was like, oh, is that a DAO name impact, or is it all of impact DAOs? And me coming from entrepreneur background, you know, in the startup scene, we have like social enterprise and then now impact startups. So there is like a lot of different way of like categorizing these different things. And I think as DAO is so early, and a lot of like impact DAOs are somewhat close to social enterprise, you know, like focusing on creating social impact through the DAOs. But I want to expand the, you know, these definition about impact DAO a little bit wider, you know. So in long term, I think every DAO should be impact DAO. And how can we make that happen is like, you know, probably three stage, like identify your impact, what you're creating, or what kind of solution you're solving. And second is like, how do you measure that impact and outcomes? And the third is like, how are you going to share that? So if you have like those three things, I think you can be an impact DAO. But I don't know how many people will agree on this definition, but a lot of different definition has happened through different books and different talks and different podcasts. But I just wanted to bring it out. Like, I want to talk about impact DAO that is a little broader in solving people's inconvenience and challenges, not just human and planet, but like way bigger things.
Mm-hmm. And Anna, for you, like, what is a DAO actually like good at when it comes to impact versus like kind of maybe traditional nonprofit structures? Is it primarily around the fundraising aspect, or is there like coordination tooling that's better in DAOs? Like, for you, like, why pick a DAO as a thing when you're trying to figure out how to like rally people?
Yeah, I think the structurally, the things that you brought up, coordination-wise, like the transparency of the DAO is much better than a traditional organization. They're mainly are able to attract a lot of funding based on trust. So you have large NGOs that have been around for many decades. And so from there, you know, like trust enables the fundraising, and their reputation is something that prevents them from corruption and like puts certain safeguards. I think for DAOs, it's cooler because you can show, you know, the transparency of both the fundraising process and where the funds are going. You don't have to rely on traditional, you know, legacy trust-based systems. And also, you have a lot more active community of people who are questioning how effective your nonprofit effort is operating. I think that's something that is definitely lacking for traditional NGOs, because once people donate, there's not much of a feedback mechanism to see whether, even though the money are going to, you know, a sufficiently reasonable cause, whether there's any other, you know, alternative solutions that large NGOs could invest in that would be way more effective. We have some examples from the Ukraine projects. Is there's the large NGOs have fundraised significant amounts of money, but because they lacked a local context and ability to operate locally, especially in eastern areas of Ukraine, food and things that were like essential for people in combat zone were never reaching them. And a lot of like larger NGOs just dropped a bunch of supplies in western Ukraine, and the gas was very expensive. So volunteers had to like fundraise to transport it to locations, and just a lot of inefficiency gaps that could potentially, you know, cost people's lives or at least diminish their livelihood. And I think the more grassroots efforts by local community, the efforts that incorporate local stakeholders could be way more impactful. And I think DAO is one structure that could allow those efforts to, you know, succeed and grow.
That is really cool. Yeah, I love that idea of having like kind of the both the people that you're hoping to help and the people like sourcing the funds kind of being in the same group, perhaps both with either whether that's like governance or at least just some ability to audit. Because then like without even going through the intermediary, they can like talk to each other, be like, hey, did that actually help you? Did stuff actually get to you? That seems like a really good use case.
Yeah, and that's something that you get when once you have a DAO community that has some stake in the project, or at least they feel like, you know, they've contributed to the project growing. So there's more kind of critical thinking around, okay, so we've done all this, like we set up a website, we fundraised some money, where did they go? Like show us the impact. And that makes you in the future, when you're funding different projects, be more critical of how much, you know, each of these projects would generate in terms of impact. And it's just a very good, I guess, like feedback mechanism that appears when a community is more actively involved.
Nice. Songyi, do you have any experience with like that kind of like bringing the community that you're trying to help like directly like in line with coordinators?
Yeah. So the one of the projects that I has helped to start was actually with the World Vision, which is like 70 years old, one of the biggest humanitarian NGO. I mean, although that we think that a lot of NGOs are very traditional, they want to keep their own way of doing things. But in the back of that, they try to really find out the innovation of it. And then they like try little things. And the one thing that I did with especially the Korean office is we built such a project or such a platform that individual can driven the causes and the charity itself. So we had a one project in that platform itself to help the kids who cannot actually afford to have a food in the school. So there is a people who actually delivering food for them. And who donors actually got to decide how we're going to spend money, and then, you know, what kind of packaging we're going to send it to it, and then the little memos for them, and then so on. And funders doesn't just end their action by giving money, but like they actually participate in the decision making of that. And then also people go and volunteer preparing the food. And then later, all the voting token and then the also money has been kind of like translated into the tokenized model. So people can actually see like how money had spent it in the bank account. So we had to build this, an on and off lamp of like a real bank account and then the tokenized system and then show them like how the money has flown. And all of that was unlocked once the resort was provided. So there is a lot of different experiment going on. And then on that particular platform that we have now, 2,000 people actually using it actively. And those activists, which is like a Taoist, that are like starting from 10 years old in elementary school to like 50 years old, like mother helping the single mom next door. So there is a lot of this Tao principle and a Taoified action is happening already in the nonprofit sector, which is really exciting.
How much does the UX of this, of the current like limitations of the Tao space, like hinder the ability or not for of it to actually help? Because I hear a lot of people that are like, oh, DAOs are so amazing. I wish that we could do a DAO for X. And it might be like a hyper specialized local thing. Like there's some people near where I live in New York that want to like basically raise funds to like return like large swaths of land and to local communities and like preservation things. And it's like the people that would be interested in funding that are probably not worldwide. They're probably local. Maybe they have crypto. Maybe they don't. Like, how much does the fact that it's either on-chain or off-chain matter? And can you do something that bridges both? Or is like, are DAOs at this point better suited for things where you've got like things that only crypto native people care about?
I mean, in my experience, you know, it also depends on how we're going to define DAO. And there are a lot of definition happening today, defining. But people seems to be open to use a new technology. And we don't necessarily need to mention a DAO or a tokenizing system. And if they are kind of agreeing on the experience of its own and the mission of its own, people are willing to try a new tool for better coordination and better resource distribution. So that's how we kind of convince people to use it. And then once they have experienced with creating a wallet, which we call a profile and a token names and stuff like that, we can all just create our own ticker. And then we give people freedom to do whatever they want to do and just providing backbone technology they don't even need to know as a blockchain and on-chain process. And that seems like working at the moment. But really, one thing that you have to really, really care for creating this kind of like impact-driven DAOs are the tooling doesn't come first. It's always really experienced and human process first, and like really clearly communicating the visions and then shared experience and shared value and things like that, and then let them actually create a structure that works best for them, and the technology and the tooling comes later to support these coordinations or communications or distribution issues they cannot do manually. So I think that's the kind of the process so far, in my opinion.
Who are like, and Anna, maybe you have insight into this, or like, who are the main like cohorts or maybe archetypes of people you need when you're thinking about starting an impact DAO? Like, who needs to be at the table in order to give you the best chance of it succeeding?
Yeah, I think, honestly, people who understand governance and token engineering. Otherwise, you can have a very successful community. And for that, you need, you know, great project managers. You need people who do marketing. You need people who do dev, if that's something that, you know, is at the core of your DAO. And by the example of HelpUA now, when we started as a community. And it was just a bunch of tech people. And we've done what we know how to do, which is like building a platform to promote different efforts in Ukraine. And now that we're slowly transitioning into, you know, the DAO space, that technological barrier, you know, I could come in and say like, yeah, sure, like I took a little bit of a token engineering academy course and like I'll figure it out. But there are so many things you need to think through, especially the more automation comes in, the more, you know, safeguards you need to impose. And for that, you need people who have that experience.
Do you need to have a tradable token for a community like this? Like, is that where a lot of complexity comes in, is when like people are like buying, selling and trading a token for a community like this? Or do you mean even more so?
I don't think it's so much in terms of like setting up a token. I just think whenever the automation comes in, meaning like, and it concerns, you know, funds distribution, that's when you need to start thinking of like, what are the mechanisms by which bad actors can come in and steal some of the funds? And so whether you're doing it with tokens or you're unlocking things with NFTs, where, you know, you're introducing voting, like there's all these different loopholes that start to emerge that if you've had sufficient incentive, meaning like a large enough money pool with donations, there's a chance that someone's going to try to come in and steal that. So because money are concerned and because the processes start to get automated, because we want, for example, people to feel like they have ownership over the money that they are donated, so they can vote and distribute the donations, meaning like more interesting people can come in, some not with the best and the most aligned incentives. That's basically when you need to start thinking things through. And I think for that, some level of experience is needed. Yeah, like look at the other projects, you know, that things happened, and security is important.
Yeah, it does seem to pop up pretty frequently. And there's some communities that I'm involved with kind of like in some DAOs, when things are not fully automated, we have like a multi-signature wallet, which is actually executing stuff with the intention of getting more automated over time. But then certain crises pop up where it's like, okay, so the community just voted to do this. And like half the community is really mad because they think that people are acting in bad faith. Do you, as the human executors of the DAO, follow the vote that people are worried is bad faith, is in bad faith? Or do you take the fact that you still have humans in the process as a bonus and like stop something? Like, that's, to me, some crises that pop up.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by like, the more automation, the more concerned you should be. Because for example, something that we are considering right now is the Moloch DAO framework. And there you would not have that human element to impose the checks. So you have to be very careful in terms of like what proposals would even pass for the review for voting. Because otherwise you can get flooded with really bad proposals. And especially if you're trying to think of ways to kind of like equalize the voting power, it might make it easier for people to for like bad actors vote to get a significantly higher, you know, impact on the decision without spending that much money in donating. And yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about specifically with Moloch DAOs also, which for if people aren't familiar, Moloch DAOs are unique in that they have non-transferable voting weights, but everybody has the ability to like leave and take a portion of the treasury whenever they want with like a according to their both voting and non-voting weight. But they also have some other quirks, like they don't have a minimum quorum for proposals. So it's easy to get like kind of flooded with bad requests and for things to sneak through and pass just because people aren't paying attention. So there's all sorts of chaos that can happen with Moloch DAOs. One thing that I was chatting about with some people last week is like how you kind of adapt a community to allow a community to adapt and change with like who's more active over time. Because you can also, when a community runs for a long period of time, I've found you end up getting a lot of people that were early on and have a lot of voting weight, but don't stay as engaged and then like maybe just end up vetoing proposals because they're not paying attention. I'd be curious to get both of your thoughts on this, like different ways of either making DAOs like time bound and so that they have to stop and freeze and change over time, or making it so that like people's governance weights like decay over time. Like, are you guys thinking about anything related to like how when communities are running for in the long term, how you actually allow them to like adapt and grow, because the people engaged are going to change and there's all sorts of weird things pop up there. And you may not, but it's just something on my mind.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And I think for especially like whoever the core contributors are, like maybe people who are having a significantly disproportionate amount of governance power, not only in terms of tokens, but also, you know, the ability to choose what proposals go to vote and the ability to like execute on proposals or veto them. I think over time, and essentially this kind of people, like because they started the project, they, you know, enjoy that legitimacy and they continue doing things. I think one way to maybe structure this for the long-term game is to have these roles, like large, significant operational roles as, you know, a position that someone can be voted into. And the most importantly, have some time bounds, as you mentioned, in terms of like every 3 months or every 5 months, like there's an re-election procedure. And that way, the people who are the most relevant and continue to be the most relevant to the DAO operations will remain in that position of power, I guess. And as the community, like the nature of the community and the needs shift, you'll see new people being reelected and DAO will continue to update itself.
And in my opinion, I think the reason why people are not proposing enough or proposing a lot of different stuff, like random stuff, or not voting enough, are it just people doesn't know how to do it right, and they just never learn how to do it. So I'm a big fan of like a minimum viable actions. You know, how can we build people's like a well-behaved patterns with a very simple, small, little voting and make it very simple and very light, instead of like giving a lot of like a token, tokenized weight-heavy token power. Instead of that, how can we like inviting everyone to vote on something that is very little, and then like build up those patterns and habits, and you know, give them a fun experience. And once it's done, then you know, people will keep coming back and then keep proposing, and then we can just help and facilitate that. So like creating a really fun and experience, that rewarding experience for voting, that could actually help on, how can I say, not really valuable voters to vote less, and then people who are like more democratized voting could happen. And the second one is actually, how could you give like a role and then responsibility to right people? And that can be only done within the really active community engagement, that you will see who's the real and who's not. And then as Anna says, you know, you can actually vote with a certain period and so on. But I'm not really a big fan of like engineering too much around voting and then so on. But every community and every cause actually have a very different way of governing. And some govern, it doesn't have to be like one vote, one token, one vote. It can be really delegated, or so many different way of doing it. But I don't think we are exploring enough of like those diverse way of decision making and then allocating power and so on. So how can we design that in a micro level and then kind of build up onto the macro level. I think that's another part that we can do.
I think that's really worth exploring. And I guess I just have a somewhat controversial, I guess, in the DAO space. I heard somebody the other day who's more of like a traditional governance researcher from the MetaGov community, but like is doing some research into DAOs and stuff. And their core frustration that they were expressing was that in the DAO space, we associate governance and voting as like the same thing. And some political scientists would say that a vote is a failure of governance, because if something actually had to go to a referendum or a vote, if it means that you didn't actually have consensus in the organization. And so like, how could we actually operate DAOs with as little voting as possible?
Yeah, because, you know, often you don't, you know, really need voting for every little single thing. And, you know, and a voting is a certainly a burden for some people. And if you can even divide it, like a voting process, and then, you know, creating value is not just through the voting. Creating value is through story, through connection, through different action that is made. So especially for impact DAO, and then especially for nonprofit and fundraising on an action-based style, you know, you just need a lot of like those coordination and connections, and real like implementation is needed to happen. And every single thing that you have to vote, then people are kind of like, I'm just like too tired of like making decision rather than doing something. So to let people do something, and then voting can be something very minimal and then very important to the core level. And, you know, not many people actually also want to have the power, you know, we can give them, but like, how can we then invite people to step up in the different things, you know? And then, for example, they can delegate their voting power for something, but they can focus on the things that they want to do in DAO. So how can we actually expand our view, just out of the voting, but also like as a holistic, and how we run a community and based on what? I think that's really, you know, something that we definitely need to explore more.
I'm super excited about this topic too. My academic background is actually in governance. And just a few months ago, I gave a talk on implementing political science to DAO governance, a DAO planet. And I think what you're referring to, like the failure of electoral processes as like not being representative enough of interests of different people who are part of the governance system, that's a huge concern. And that's, voting is kind of a simpler way to say like, sure, like we've accounted for other, for what other people think. Realistically though, you have, you know, either it's a majority vote, or even worse, in DAOs you have an equal weighted voting. In that way, you can never say that the system is democratic, because democracy is about everyone sharing in an equal power and governance. And also just generally, voting as a mechanism, like, it lacks that consensus seeking component to it. And when you have a decision where people disagree and you solve that challenge by voting, you're basically saying like, hey, well, whoever the majority is, they're going to trump the views and the interests of this other smaller group. A better system, that is also unfortunately a more challenging system, because it involves, you know, setting up spaces for people to talk, moderating the conversation, and making sure that the conversation reach a point where the actual like true consensus is achieved. That is much different, but not impossible. And in the conversations, and in kind of like the governance processes driven by consensus, you'd also have more emphasis on including people who are, whose like opinions and interests are the minority interests in the group, and including them not in a way of just like listening them out, but actually like taking them into account and trying to find some sort of middle ground before putting things to vote, and vote just being kind of this formalizing process and not something that is like at the core of the governance.
Yeah, like we need actual deliberation spaces, not just referendum infrastructure. Someone was describing to me this, and it might have been like Seth Frey or might have been Primavera. They're talking about this. It's like, how could we create some sort of infrastructure where when there is some consensus that's starting to build around some idea, like it, almost like as a blob, it starts to like attract the people that agree with this thing, and then like it's more like that blob just kind of grows, and then at some point that whatever the consensus of the group is can just be enacted somehow. but it can kind of stay under that like noise filter ratio until maybe it gets to the point where there are two factions that need to like come in and deliberate something. But it's like organic, like bubbling up of the group consensus versus like just every payroll decision. I think that DAOs could probably improve significantly in flow just by kind of switching to more streaming types of compensation and like continuous types of like governance versus these like discrete things which require so much more attention. Because then like I just find that I have so much fatigue from like pulling out my ledger and like signing every like tiny little vote because I'm paranoid that like I have little time to actually read and simulate absolutely everything when I'm just like in that kind of operations fatigue mode.
Yeah, and I think also like a role that the DAOs are missing is kind of like a governance coordinator or like governance operations person who would deal with things like voter fatigue and whose like entire job could be just making sure that, you know, there's some public education around how to vote, that the voting proposals are not convoluted and are framed in a way that is accessible to people while still conveying kind of the true intent of different proposals. And that's something that I have not seen enough. And I think in some of the DAOs that I've been a part of, it's like, hey, here's a 10 pages proposal and we wrote it in a very smart way. And I was like, whoa, I'll read through it, but I'm not sure how many other people will do. And like, I don't blame them.
Yeah. That and also scribes are like keeping track of the history of DAOs and what's actually happening. And I think like just having document like we have Christina with us and just like the idea of like somebody that can help us remember what is even happening and like build a shared narrative of a community over time is such an essential piece of like community glue, like so much more than like we were saying earlier, you never start a DAO with like deploying the tech stack.
Yeah. And I think also just to bring this to impact DAOs, like we are trying to automate a lot of things and it's literally within the DAO definition, which now we can question how useful it is. Like it's automated organization. And I think there is a certain tension between that objective of trying to create a fully automated trustless organization versus having, you know, a community of people who are getting together, who are working towards a common, you know, non-profit good social cause. And I think that's something we'll need to reconcile in the impact space and see whether it does make sense for us to be a DAO or just maybe like a decentralized organization or something.
Yeah, and it's quite amazing like how this questioning about the DAO definition and all these things come arise in the different places. And I think especially the impact DAO space, you know, is either leaders or people participating, their missions and commitment and the contributions are really, really important because it's not just like few actions and you put money together and they become a DAO, but it's really the value driven and then what they want to see in the future together. So they have to resonate with the storytelling and the narrative and then the stream of work and then a lot of different things together. And so I think in this case, our definition of decentralized autonomous organization is really focusing on having people that has autonomy over their mission and their determinations and, you know, what they're really called for. And then with those autonomous humans, and we can create a decentralized organization and that DAO as a that definition maybe works better in this case. And a lot of humans here in the impact DAO space are way more kind of shared vision driven and then human experience center driven. And that's why I think it's more fun actually working in the impact DAO than just normal other investment DAO, for example, or something like that.
Are there any other like lessons that you've seen from like the political science world or like kind of pre-DAO human coordination that you think like the whole DAO space is just kind of missing or not, or just they'll discover it next year and someone will think that they invented it and write a blog post about it. But is there anything in the back of your mind that's like, why aren't, like, this is something so obvious, why are we not doing this?
I don't know how relevant it will be to impact DAOs as much, potentially relevant. But one of the things, a lot of the conversations in DAOs, like, hey, we're bringing the direct democracy back, like Athenian democracy, we're like so awesome. And then, oh, but no one participates. And so we're talking about like voter apathy and stuff like that. And I think if people have studied Athenian democracy, they would know that all the political work there was rewarded. meaning people were paid to participate in referendums. And the idea was that in no way they wanted the political work to be seen as inferior to paid labor. So I guess one of the big takeaways is that there's potentially, we'll need more emphasis on governance and governance being rewarded, because it is a labor that supposedly keeps the organization together. I think another kind of realization probably going to be that we might not need to make every DAO like governance centered. And in some cases, like governance might be an end in itself. In some cases, governance is just like a small tool that helps a certain goal, like allowing people to feel more autonomy in, you know, where their efforts are going into. It's going to be very interesting, and I'm pretty sure people will write a few blog posts about, hey, we need to reward DAO work.
And I mean, there is so many different people and in history has actually explored the DAO-like activities and then theories and then different resources and here and there. And early enough, like even before a DAO, there are like Holocracy, and then there are like other teal organization, reinventing organization theories. And there's so many different leadership and then how to manage organizations better. But way before that, I'm myself from Korea, and we have our kind of indigenous or our traditional practices that are like a DAO, you know, and then it's just purely born because of the functionality of a human survivor and then a coordination of labors, basically. And the way before that, like, you know, our First Nations and our like real ancestors, that they had a lot of different DAO alike kind of theories or customs and traditionals through nature. So I'm using a lot of DAO design or experience design based on the nature patterns. And the nature itself is actually very much DAO-like, you know, and especially the permaculture. And then you compare with the monocultures, the permaculture is just way more sustainable, regenerating a lot of different things. And then there is so many different actors, not just one big pine tree, just overeating the whole mountain, which is actually killing the soil and killing all the living organism in it. So how can we actually bring more ideas, inspiration from our nature, our ancestors, indigenous wisdom, and our like, you know, like old wisdom. And that's, I think, one of my really big interests. And it's not a shilling time, but like next year, we're going to host an event in Korea in April, actually bringing these wisdoms together, and then East and the rest, and weaving the wisdoms of a lot of different, you know, like indigenous practices or different backgrounds from different nations and different communities, and what has been done, and what we are doing, what we have not done, and what's the wisdom that we can actually cultivate and move forward together. So I think that would be quite interesting to study and experience.
For sure. Yeah, I attended a talk on Friday that I think I'd like to nominate for the conference. It was called, you know, we have Solar Punk and Lunar Punk. They are trying to have mycopunk or mycelial cyborg economies, where we learn from the way that, you know, the cycle of birth and rebirth and the role that like mycelium and mushrooms play in the forest to, as something that can help economies like evolve and grow over time.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And then one beautiful things about DAO is actually we are not attached to longevity of the DAO. I mean, we want one of the DAOs that we are participating to go long to just achieve the goal. But we are like not really attached to death of these things, you know, like this DAO is beautiful because we all step in together. And once time comes, we kind of, you know, go back to the death and then compost and then come back with a new either organization, new theory, a new experiment. And that was like one really awakening experience for me, like working in the traditional company versus working in the DAO. We've done like our missions, and once it's done or once we fail or succeed in the experiment, we're like, ah, we've done our job, and now we're moving on and sharing our learning to the community and then move on. And then everybody just felt really liberated and then really, you know, recharged by that experience. And then you cannot even imagine in the normal company, oh, we've done like 5 years of experiment, are we going to now destruct the whole company and leave? It's not going to happen. But
because DAO were like naturally built with a lot of different micro kind of mycelium or nature sort of like components, so that that's possible. And I think that should be more encouraged rather than discouraged.
I agree. I totally agree that like that we should encourage DAOs to end their own like lives when they've fulfilled their purpose. Because I feel like there's a lot of communities now that I've been in the space for a few years where the initial excitement is great. Then you kind of have this period of maybe productivity. And then I feel like there's inevitably some period where like some people are like, okay, why aren't you as engaged anymore? And it's like, oh, well, I feel like we kind of accomplished the thing we were going to do. Now I'm like focusing on this thing. Maybe as like, leading towards kind of our final questions is just like, how can a DAO figure out if it has served its purpose and if it should kind of keep going, or like, what are some ways that DAOs can like really know if they're healthy and operating properly? Maybe An, do you have any examples from like some of the communities that you've been in of like, wow, that's a really like, that's a healthy signal or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's, and something we brought up very early on, is one of the important things within a DAO when you're starting is to define its purpose. And I think most of the time when we define the purpose, it's quite vast, like help onboard a billion, you know, number of people into crypto, or like help save the world, help Ukraine, stop the war. And so I think it might make sense to narrow down those purposes. And for some community efforts, if you have a group of people who are like, hey, we're willing to dedicate a few months to this cause, then given that as a constraint, you can narrow down the purpose. And then, you know, once that achieved, like, for example, when you fundraised $100,000, you're like, okay, I feel like I've done my contribution to the war in Ukraine, and I feel like now I'm done. But I think as long as like the larger problem exists, and that's what kind of the nature of most of the social impact projects, like the problems are so global and so huge that they will probably continue to exist for a while, and a lot of work will be needed to solve them. As long as that problem is still there and it's relevant, as long as the approach to the solution still makes sense and is the most effective, and as long as there are people who are interested in continuing to support the cause, I think it makes sense for the DAO to go on. And so unless it's like from the beginning, a time-bound project, I do think that DAOs should be more thoughtful about long-term sustainability and making sure that they can continue to operate, given factors that you mentioned, like some of the people dropping off, or like some of the potential solutions kind of changing and better solutions emerging and so on.
And yeah, like Anna said, the missions, especially the impact DAO one we try to solve, is like such a big thing. And in my opinion, it's not a issue that can be tackled by one DAO. And how can we actually, even if the one DAO has a very specific goal to solve this one mission, and how can we, you know, actually dividing those effort in a small department, so either small sub DAO or a small pod or different working groups, and then all of these groups can be just 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 people, and these are the micro groups actually making a change. So I think we got to definitely start designing what's the bottom up process of effort, and also communication and story building and things like that. So dividing or segmenting the work, and then also the missions and the values, and then creating a mini micro DAOs and mini micro organization to go into the macro mission. I think that's the one thing that could happen. And I see that's way more efficient than keep voting on the Discord or some sort of like tech platform that no one is just like reading it and so on. And so big mission is small action and small organization. And the second thing is, if we see one mission as a something living, you know, like a living organization, then we can see this as a season pattern. So there is a spring, summer, fall, winter for each organization. And for each season, you need each different actors and the leadership. And because it's a DAO, people can step up whenever they are needed or to be called. So it's not just one boss or one leader goes for a whole season. But once the DAO members are actually identifying who's good at what, and again, going back to the autonomous being, right? Once you know who you are and what you can offer to the community, and that kind of sets you into a certain seasonal leadership. And then the DAO is actually have aware that we can all step up and have this distributed leadership as our framework and our practices. People can step up, and then using different leadership for the different season is actually really interesting way of achieving this goal, and a healthy way of sustaining and then regenerating the DAO's goal itself, and then also DAO as well, not just the goal alone. So I think that's the two things that I've seen success, and it's very interesting. It's hard to achieve, but it's interesting enough to really keep experimenting.
That season thing is particularly interesting to me, just because I've heard people refer to seasons in DAOs, but to me, I think it's usually in the context of like kind of like a, you know, an online video game has a season where it's like, oh, here's all the cool new stuff this season. But actually thinking about it, like that spring, summer, fall, winter cycle of like the community is going to go through different cycles and has different needs of attention and leadership and skills in the different seasons. That's to me very, very exciting about different ways that we can think about how to like organize and accommodate for those different cycles. I guess as a final thing, I'll ask each, what impact DAO do you wish could exist? And maybe it's a hyper local thing or a global thing. Is there any DAO that you dream of that has not yet taken shape?
I have one that I'm very excited about, and I think there has been some efforts to set something like this up, but more locally. I would really be willing to contribute a lot of effort into like a global journalism DAO. And I think creating a space and like incentive models where the information is free and kind of publicly owned is a huge public good that could have a huge impact on behaviors of millions of people, and especially in countries with, you know, more authoritarian governments where the media is controlled by states and journalists, you know, are restricted and fear for their freedom and for their lives. This kind of efforts to enable journalism could be extremely impactful, and it's a big challenge, but solving it would be very meaningful for a lot of people on this planet.
Nice. I would enjoy reading the news from the journalism DAO. And Songyi?
I mean, for me, there is always a more DAO than I could think of. Actually, every day there's a new DAO popping up, and then it's such a different, you know, narrative that they bring in. I definitely want to see more storytellings in the space. But I really want to see DAOs that are really focusing on the experience of humans and the transformation of its own life. And it's not just like a future of work, but like we and changing ourselves first, and then that become a part of DAO. And then so DAO can also change the culture, and DAO that is not just focusing on a mission of its own, but like focusing on individual people and the members of their life. And then our life change is our life change, our system change, our DAO change is a kind of kind of going a little bit more deeper into the each one of the DAO members rather than like a DAO of something, you know. So I think that's how I would look at it.
Awesome. Thank you both. Any final thoughts you want to make sure we address?
I'm just curious, like how Anna get into the DAO space. I think we skipped the intro part, like how we, you know, were interested in impact DAOs and how we landed.
Oh yeah, didn't ask you any of that.
DAO mysterious background. Well, that's actually the DAOs is the reason why I got into Web3 space at all. I had a very unfortunate introduction to crypto in 2018. Where I was applying for a fintech job. And on my first day, I realized that the company was a huge crypto scam, and it was just not fun. And I quit on the first day. I decided to never like touch anything crypto or blockchain ever again. And last year, my friend who I took like governance classes with, we took like a really cool course on designing constitutions. She came to me and she said, hey, look at this thing called DAOs, there are so many parallels between what we've been discussing in terms of how to design effective state constitutions and how to design DAO governance frameworks. And I was like, damn, like you sold me. And so I slowly like open up to the idea of DAOs. And then I was like, fine, like I look into what is, you know, blockchain and crypto. And then I'm like, oh, there's Web3. And that's how I slowly got into space. I work on marketing projects. And so I kind of got a job in the space and was doing that until the war started. And that's when I moved into more utilizing DAOs for impact. And that's how I got here. How about you?
Very cool. Yeah, I'm glad that you're able to recover from the scam.
Yeah, it took a second because I was really like, I was like, there's so many cool technologies. Like, you know, I can go into AI and I can just like work on startups. Like, I don't need that space, but I'm very happy. I'm still, you know, very hesitant around most of the crypto projects, but I think I do differentiate Web3 as somewhat of a separate space, and that's where I feel I belong. And I'm very happy that I did decide to open up and explore Web3 and DAOs.
It's the nice, cool part of crypto.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
And well, my story, I actually started my career at the nonprofit organization. And, you know, as I was working there, I totally could see like this is not the way to change the world. And I found entrepreneurship as a way at the theory of change. And then when I was in West Africa, Mali, in the refugee camp, that I saw that they had no way to send and receive money. So me and my partner back then, we invented, not invented, but we put together a Bitcoin SMS wallet so people can send and receive money in the text message. So that was the only devices they had that is communicating with other people and their societies and so on, with a solar panel charger because they were living in a tent built with trash, you know. So from the beginning on, actually for me, the mission of using blockchain or Bitcoin or any crypto was like bringing a better solution to the world. With that, I just keep staying on. And after that, I worked on a decentralized identity. So I have sovereign identity. So identity is a really important part of any infrastructure that we're building at the moment. And then after that, I met another organization that are really doing a lot of experiment around the decentralized organizing. And then I got into DAO space. So that the whole journey has been like 10 years now. And now I'm like more interested in how can we actually bring the human OS into the DAO space and really utilizing the tool, but the stories and the human behavior and process and the value first and then tools as a second leg to support these missions. Hopefully see that every DAO has become an impact DAO, right? Yeah. And I think it is. We just didn't realize yet.
I'll be super curious and like following your journey forward. I think especially like listening to your stories, kind of bringing in the Eastern perspective into this, I think there is a huge kind of battle between us wanting to have this like community-owned, community-focused kind of collectivist organization working together towards a certain goal, and then us trying to like make things as autonomous as possible and like automate and make sure there's like no need for human-based trust. So it'd be very cool to see, you know, more people like you bringing in like, hey, you know, we want it to be more human-centered, and there is a huge value in that, and it has proven historically, you know, to work to our human advantage. So it'll be very interesting to see this models evolve.
That's a very interesting tension that you highlight around like the automation maxi and like human coordination maxi camps. So yeah, well, thank you both again.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode of DAO or Never. Make sure to subscribe at logos.xyz/podcast and follow us on Twitter at 0xlogos so you never miss out on any of the latest happenings in the DAO world. It's DAO or Never.